Hi, friend, and welcome to the Idea of Us podcast. I'm happy to have you here, and I would like to start out with apologizing. Apologizing for taking extremely long to publish a show, for saying this is so beautiful. Once you hear this episode, you will exactly know what I mean, and for the quality of the audio. My interview partner and I were located continents away from each other, and since she shared so many valuable things, please increase the volume to enjoy it fully. Regarding my delay, I will not name any excuses here, but I'll promise to do better. Great, since we got this out of the way. How are you doing? I am so happy that you tuned in today, and I hope you're doing well and staying safe. Today, we will discuss an important topic, the importance of mental health, with an expert in this field, Danique Boxall, professional clinical counselor who is not just a friend, but a sister. I was introduced to her by another sister of mine, Sugi, which are both now relatives through time and experiences. She will share her knowledge with us, and we will learn and discuss the topic of mental health and its importance, why asking for help is so complicated, and how it affects minorities and the Black community. I hope that it will bring you as much joy as it brought me, that you will learn something, that you're going to be inspired to take care of yourself, and if your cup is full, to also take care of your loved ones. Hi, and welcome to the third episode of The Idea of Us. Today, I have a very special guest with me. She is my sister and a friend, beautiful human being, and I'm very, very grateful and lucky to have her here today on the show. So welcome, Danique.
Thank you, Yannicka. I feel the very same way. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's start with how we know each other.
Wow. Life is so interesting. I think life brought us together. We have a very special friend in common. But I can't actually remember the very first day I met you or the first time I met you. I just feel like you've always been in my life. I wonder if it was the in San Francisco. Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember the picnic. But you know what? I had to think about it as well. Yesterday, I thought about it the whole day. I was like, where did I meet Danique? Because it feels like we're friends for forever. Yes. So it was at the picnic in San Francisco where Sugi, shout out to Sugi. who is a very good friend of ours and as well a very special human being that brought us together. Yeah. And it was a picnic, and I think we clicked from the beginning. I just loved your aura and everything you were about, and specifically when I saw your apartment and all the books that you read. It was very crystal clear for me that I hope that we stay friends for a long time already at that point. But that's how we met.
I remember it now vividly. Yes. Off the grid, Presidio in San Francisco. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I have felt the same way also, Yannicka. Just kindred spirits. And I'm really grateful for your friendship.
Thank you, Danique. Me, I am as well. And you agreed. I asked you at the beginning when I started the Idea of Us podcast, if you would come out to the show, and you said yes. Made me so happy. I want to start a little bit by, I want to know a little bit more about you and share that with our listeners today. So I would love if you tell us a little bit about your passion, your purpose.
Sure. So I think probably in a nutshell, my passion and purpose are really rooted in mental health. And the way that I explain it to my friends, my family, just being fully invested in the mental and emotional well-being of my ancestors' children. For me, that means a lot of different things. The way that I show up at work, I'm a registered associate professional clinical counselor. And a little bit later, we can talk about the different kinds of therapists and psychotherapists, terminologies, that kind of thing. And I also do some consulting work for organizations at the intersection of mental health and organizational culture and racial equity facilitation, that kind of thing, really focusing on culture shifts within organizations, centering racial equity, in addition to my clinical work. So with clinical work, I see individual adults, couples, teens and youth in a group private practice in Oakland. It's called Sankofa Health, Sankofa Holistic Counseling Services, and I've been there for about a year. I also do a lot of work with the Association of Black Psychologists. The Bay Area chapter started a program called Therapist in Residence, and so I've been with them for about a year or two, and so I do a lot of work rooted in Black psychology. And then what else? This is a second career for me also, Yedek. I can share with your listeners that it's never too late to pursue what you are deeply passionate about and what you feel called to pursue. So before this, I did healthcare management consulting. So I was still in the healthcare arena, but doing very, very more systems-oriented kind of productivity-based, revenue-based work around strategy development and that kind of process improvement type of thing from boutique firms, big four. And then, yeah, I had a kind of a moment of reckoning where all my interests just, you know, kept aligning with the people part of the work, not so much the process part of the work. And I sat with that for a long time, reflected deeply, and decided to go back to grad school to make this a reality, to become a clinician. And it has brought me to this space, and I have not looked back.
That's great. I remember when I met you, I think you were in grad school, and and it takes so much courage as well, you know, to change, to shift. You're still in the same industry, sort of, but you shifted your purpose or your role. And how was that process for you? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
Happy to. Thank you for that. It's you're right. And I think sometimes it's about fear, you know, it's, oh, but I've already invested in this thing. I'm supposed to be doing this. I should just finish, you know, the salary's great, all the things that we kind of tell ourselves. But I think if, you know, in that moment of just being still and checking in with, what do I want? Not, you know, the voices around me or what I think I'm supposed to be doing, the boxes we tend to put ourselves in or that society puts us in. I had to really, you know, kind of sit with that and create my own narrative. And so there was a little bit of fear walking away from, you know, a career I invested a decade in and going back to school and, you know, deciding, all right, it's not going to be a new job. I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, another job. It was going to be a whole new skill set and really just a different way of working. So I planned for it. There's no nobility in, you know, not being able to take care of yourself because you're pursuing what's important. And I also believe that, you know, the universe conspires to make that happen for you when you're in alignment. So I did. I tried to take steps thoughtfully, and yeah, it wasn't without fear, Yedega, but I did anyway, and it paid off really, really richly. And it's, I don't know if you've ever had that moment where you're in a space and you just know with every fiber of your being that this is exactly where you're supposed to be. That's what my first day of class was like, going back to grad school a couple of years ago. So yeah, when we met, I was halfway through, I think.
Wow. Yeah, that's that. But you know, that first of all, that's so beautiful that you, when you like, you knew exactly that there was fear behind it. So you obviously there's fear in change always, right? Yeah. But without that investment, you wouldn't have received what you're receiving now, that you exactly, as you beautifully said, aligned with the universe, with your purpose, with whatever you want to do in your life. And I think that is so important. It's so important that we reach that point. But as you said as well, there's a lot of boxes we think we have to check, whether they're interest, like whether they come from within myself or the expectations around me. So I really admire the step you took. I wish you would have been my counselor, but you're my friend, so it doesn't work.
We are forever friends. So yes, if you have me in that capacity and I have you in that capacity.
Yes, that is so true. So for everyone else, I am jealous, but who receives Danique as a support person, as a counselor, and as a friend in their life. But you said that you changed, basically. It was more strategy before, it was more systemic, and now it's going towards more the people part. Mm-hmm. So you find joy in helping people, because as a counselor, that is what you do. You want to support someone, you want to help them. And why did you decide to, why did you decide to make that part of your purpose?
I think you decided to make me part of the purpose. I don't know that I chose it so much as I woke up to it, or woke up to a calling, if you will. So yeah, the work I did before, it's important work. It's, you know, it's what allows, I think, for systems to really function and improve their ability to provide services and improve the delivery of healthcare services in the health space. It's valuable work. It just wasn't my work, or it was for a period of time, you know. And I think, as I kind of mentioned, a lot of the projects, so, you know, maybe it was a big systems related project, or implementing some kind of electronic health record or something, or it was mostly process oriented. There would be some people components in training folks or supporting people, you know, you go live with a new system. And that's where I always found the most joy. I would sign up for all of the people related types of teams and projects and assignments. I would always kind of want to be more aligned with interfacing with people, connecting with people. That's something that I've just always felt a natural affinity for. And so I didn't really think of it, you know, in a career context. What does that mean? How could that manifest itself into a career? So that's where, you know, I did a lot of reading, introspection, and, you know, you do these assessments sometimes if you ever come across these of, oh, what's my passion? What's my purpose? What am I good at? So I went through all of that, and, you know, it really was just tuning out kind of the noise and sitting quietly with myself and sitting with, like, what I already knew to be true, and recognizing that, okay, this is going to involve maybe some risk, and maybe, yeah, a shift, and making it happen. So yeah, always knew that I wanted to help people, and just kind of, yeah, really became passionate, I think, about mental health over a period of time, understanding my own, understanding the different things that influence our mental health. So the two started to come together in a way that I didn't expect, but I had to respond to.
Thank you so much, Danique. I love how you say that. Like, it chose me so beautifully, said, because it's within you. Like, that's what you kind of already knew always, what you were, what's your purpose. But maybe it takes some time to align it with what is happening in life and what is happening around you. Yeah. And you've been now, I think, probably more than a decade in the industry. But the topic that we want to talk about today is mental health. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering why you believe, because I as we said before, like, fear plays plays a big role within change, and we all of us go through things sometimes, and mental health plays an important role. So I would like to know your opinion. Like, why do you think it is important, specifically, like, coming with your background and from your perspective?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So more than a decade in the healthcare arena in general, in mental health professionally, it's been about 3 years. I think it's important to think of mental health, Yadega, the way that we do think of physical health. I think very often when we think of mental health, we think of mental illness, of the diagnoses that tend to go with that, right? When we think of mental health, we automatically think, oh, how is it compromised? How is it falling apart? We're the common diagnoses around anxiety and depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder, different kinds of things that we have become familiar with just through reading, listening, what we hear and see in media. We tend to focus on when mental health goes awry, when it goes wrong. And if we think of it as a part of our well-being, the way that we think of physical health, the way that we might invest in taking care of physical health in a preventative way, or taking care of ourselves when we do fall ill or something like that, for me, that tends to be, it's just a more holistic picture of really thinking through the importance of mental health. Why is it so important? Because it's part of our equilibrium. It's part of, you know, how we function. It makes up a really strong pillar of our well-being. So I try to expand that that frame in the conversations I have with folks, with clients, with people who are curious and, you know, kind of skeptical. What does this all mean? You know, just to really center the conversation. And if we think of this as every other part of our lives, that we invest into to create an atmosphere of health and well-being, this is the same thing.
What you just said, like, just resonated with me so much, because I was thinking about mental health as something I need to fix.
Right, right.
Like, I was thinking, okay, mental health means I'm fixing. Mm-hmm. But what you are referring to more is like, okay, like I go to the gym, not to fix, but just to be maybe preventive.
Sure, right? Yeah.
That's how we should see mental health. But what do you think, why do you think we don't, am I the minority in thinking like that, that we need to fix something? And no. Where do you think that comes from?
Exactly. Great question. It's you're not the minority. I do think a lot of us think that way. And this is where we get into the stigma around mental health. We're socialized to think that way, Erica. We don't get the same kind of messaging, you know, just growing up in our communities. We don't hear people talk about mental health the way that we do when we talk about, you know, physical health, going to see a physician because of something, or going for your annual checkup. That's just kind of part of our language, is the way that that's the way that we talk. Something's wrong. Oh, I'm going to see a doctor. Oh, okay. I hope you feel better. It's just part of what we realize, right? It's, there's a big cultural component there as well. I'm Jamaican growing up. That's not part of the narrative. If something's going on with you, there's a doctor that you will see that takes care of your physical health, but there is no kind of frame of reference for, but who do you see if you've been feeling this thing that you can't explain, and you're not able to sleep, or you've been feeling anxious, or in that way, or, you know, if something isn't wrong, and just kind of having that idea of the fact that mental health exists, it is a part of our well-being. How do we have conversations around the things that, you know, we're experiencing or going through? Do we make space for a mental health narrative? I think that's part of how we're socialized, and historically we have not. I think that's starting to shift now, but yeah, it hasn't been part of what we hear.
I totally agree with you. Most people that I know, and then I think there's a different layer, like you said, you're from Jamaica, and I'm from Eritrea, and I see the same the same patterns. Mental health is even a topic you would not even talk about,
right.
Because it is considered as weakness, and which I believe is a belief that is quite common within the Black community, I think, in general, but even within Western communities. And talking about mental health maybe a little bit more progressive in Western communities or countries, but it's still not where it's supposed to be, I believe.
I would agree with you. I do think it's evolving. But yeah, that's really where a lot of the stigma comes from. This idea that it is a weakness, that you should be able to handle whatever it is that is on your plate. If you are not doing well and you're something's going on emotionally, mentally, it's not a physical attribute that one can see, and, you know, maybe in that way, then something's off, something's wrong. There's a lot of shame around that. And so if you're told, just kind of in a societal context, this is the way that the society holds mental health, when you start to have a different experience, who are you going to talk to? You know, who will you share that with? If it isn't welcome, the conversation isn't a nurturing, inviting, welcome conversation to really talk about what's going on in the internal experience. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of shame. It becomes kind of oppressive, which is its own additional layer of stress that we're dealing with, you know, in addition to that original wound. So it becomes compounded. But yes, it has been historically in the Black community, in other communities of color, in immigrant communities, you and I, those are the messages that we get around mental health. It is a weakness. You should be able to take care of this. Be strong. You know, push through. You've got, and you're thinking, you know, hello, I'm a whole human experiencing a wide array of emotions, of feelings, and there's only space for one. I must be smiling. I must be positive. You know, I can't experience anything else. Well, this is strange. And so, generationally, that's a message that we get. And, you know, I think it came from a place of survival, right? There, you know, that yeah. Negative, absolutely. If we think of just what our ancestors have been through, there wasn't a lot of time and flexibility to reflect and to nurture what was going on internally. It was putting one foot in front of the other and surviving and, you know, helping families thrive, putting food on the table. So, you know, we get where it comes from, but as we evolve, is it still serving us? You know, I beg us to really pause and really consider, how are we talking about this? How are the youth hearing us talk about this? How are our children hearing us talk about this? So we start to normalize this conversation.
Yes, you couldn't have said it better, Dinique. That's so true, because specifically the pushing through part, you know, and I love how you explained it, because there's a reason for why our ancestor, why we are the way we are, and why our ancestors. And it is definitely coming from how we deal with struggle. And there is some healing as well, I would say, in not taking everything too serious, right? Like the joy and then not thinking about things too much. I think there can be some healing within it. But I think we are at a stage where we are suppressing. And then I totally agree with where you said, how is that serving us anymore? And it is an important topic. But do you see a little, I mean, now you're in Jamaica as well, right? Now, do you see a shift within your community or within the Black community?
I do. And I'm really excited about it, Erica. And yes, you make a good point. We are evolving, and yes, we are suppressing, and the environment plays a really critical role in that. Because if you don't feel safe expressing what's going on with you, how you're feeling, that you're feeling challenged, or you're having some kind of emotional struggle, if you don't feel safe sharing that, then, you know, that you're silenced. You're silenced just because of the environment that you're in. So we talk about the ideologies around mental health in Western culture. That's an important point. And you know, who is safe to speak freely? Who is welcomed to the conversation? Who is space made for? You know what I mean? There's not always equity in that. So even though we're evolving, for people of color, that's not always the case. To answer your question, I do see a shift. Yes, I see a shift in the way that influential people are talking about mental health, from political figures to celebrities. You know, really talking about their own struggles and journeys, and really talking openly about seeing therapists and being in psychotherapy. And I feel like I've read a few things that talks about the therapy generation. And I think there's a lot of beauty in that, to be able to normalize those conversations. So, you know, folks can be curious and really move toward those kinds of conversations, you know, instead of retreating from them. So yeah, even in my own culture, I was driving from Kingston the other day and saw a billboard around, you know, if you need help, if you are struggling with mental health issues, here are some numbers to call, kind of, you know, around crisis, that kind of thing. And I was thinking, wow, this is amazing. This is, you know, coming from growing up here, leaving after high school to go away for college in the U.S., that was not a thing. Having that kind of a conversation was not a thing, I can tell you. So, you know, having my dad bring me up to speed about what's been going on in the news, different kinds of mental health conversations, people just really speaking openly about mental health interventions, their programming, it's been impressive. And I'm really hopeful for what the future holds.
Yes, that's beautiful to see that you can see there's a shift, and I can see a shift in our communities as well. And what would interest me is, what do you think in terms of gender? Does that play a role? Like, because I, for instance, have the feeling in my community that females, we are used to speaking up. We're used to speaking about what is going on within us. But I don't really see that within the male community. Like, you know, you have to be strong, you have to be pushed through. We have them both, whether you're female or male. But I see it a little bit more on the male side. And I don't think it's serving them very well, or I even think it's harmful. So
no, I don't know that it's a choice. You know, I don't think it's a choice. We are allowed to speak up. We are given space to emote, right? If you whatever it is that you're feeling, if you feel the need to cry, if you feel the need to scream, you're given space to, you're consoled differently, right? So you know, seeing gender as a spectrum, that's also something that I think we're evolving in communities, in communities of color and Black communities, certainly in my community and in immigrant communities as well, culturally. So holding gender as a spectrum, oh, and just looking at how we're socialized, oh, I don't think we can expect men to emote the same way. It is just, they're not given the same kind of space. Just, there's a very different set of rules and expectations, right? So when you think of what we're allowed to do, what we're allowed to say, if you fall and scratch your knee, someone's there to, you know, in a traditional sense, to pick you up, to brush you off, let you know, okay, what's the message that a little boy might get? You know, oh, get up, keep running, you're fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, very early, those messages are indoctrinated in us, very early. So, yeah, it comes back to, again, the environment, those narratives, those social structures, systemically, that teach us how to behave, that teach us how to feel, and what emotions do we get to express? And it's not all of them in those cases.
What I'm hearing is that for me, there's a couple of stigmas that you talked about. One is the stigma, obviously, of we need to fix mental health rather than we're doing it preventively. And if, in the first place, we are allowed to articulate our issues that we are having in the communities that we're living in. And for me, that is aligned with, because let's say I have a mental issue, I have to ask for help, right? I have to ask someone, whether it's my family, whether it's a counselor, a therapist, whatever. So, but we have, in that regard, another issue again, because in a lot of communities that I know, asking for help is, yeah, again, a sign of weakness, right? So I would like to talk a little bit with you about why we are perceiving it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important. You know, who do you ask for help? Who are you allowed to ask for help? Does this mean that you're talking about your family and sharing your family's business with people on the street? You know, like, that's this perception of, oh, how dare you talk about us, or you're talking to a stranger about your feelings. So then, right, you get that, you're laughing because you know it's true. Those men are like, what do you mean you're talking to a therapist? Who is this person? So there's that layer of just dealing with what comes with that. Again, that stigma, the narrative around what that even means. You should be able to deal with your issues yourself. You should be able to keep them in the family. If we start using the word should too much, I get concerned, because here are the boxes again that come with limiting what we're able to do, and the flexibility and freedoms that we try to exercise in the context of our lives. So yes, there's limitations around that, around knowing that we may need some help, identifying, okay, there's something going on here. I want to check in with someone. Maybe it's preemptively, I'm not really sure what's going on, but let me talk with someone. Or the experiences that we're having might be aligned with some really, you know, challenging symptoms, debilitating symptoms. What does this mean? So being able to really identify that too can be a struggle and a barrier, Yedaga, because of that kind of push through mentality that, you know, we tend to have in the Black community and in communities of color. Okay, if I'm pushing through and I'm, you know, waking up one foot in the front of the other and I'm doing what I need to do, you might not notice that there is this weight that you are carrying around, that there is this feeling that you have that you can't quite describe, that you haven't been sleeping well, that you haven't been eating well, that you're irritable, that you are feeling sad, or that your thoughts are racing, or you know, there's so many, there's just, we experience different things in different ways, just highlighting maybe some of the common symptoms, different kinds of, mental health challenges. We might not have the time, and sometimes really what people might say could be a luxury, to really stop and check in with ourselves to say, wait, something's off base here. I need some help. So sometimes it can be really just the ability to check in with ourselves that can be compromised. If we're able to do that, or, you know, being in relationship with other people who can say, hey, you know, I've noticed that since this thing happened, you haven't quite been yourself. How are you feeling? That might be a moment where we get a chance to pause and to reflect. Knowing who to ask, you know, if you can, if you do have a relationship with a friend who does see a therapist, or that just even that topic of conversation is accessible for that friend. You might say something, hey, I'm thinking about talking to someone. Hopefully you're met with support and it makes the process a little bit easier. Asking your physician, hey, you know, do you know any mental health clinicians, or do you know of anyone I can talk to? I've been kind of feeling this way. Lots of people start with that first line of medical intervention with their physicians. That's who they're comfortable with. And for a lot of people, what we call somatization, when you're experiencing mental health struggles, it shows up in the body. And so you might be talking to a physician about this incessant headache or this stomach ache that you've been feeling, chest pain, that kind of thing. And so there's absolutely, you know, a space for that, and your physician will go through all the clinical steps that need to happen. And if it's related to and connected to stress and mental health pressures, that kind of thing, then that could be a place where you could get a recommendation also. And, you know, we're all connected online, and you probably do a quick Google search of clinicians in your area by zip code, that kind of thing. I'm happy to share some resources. You know, it can be daunting to scroll through a whole list of folks, but there are directories there that are helpful. Therapy for Black Girls, Therapy for Black Men, the Association of Black Psychologists. Today, if you are using insurance, you can go directly to your plan to see what's in network. So there are options to find support, but we have to recognize that, yes, there are also barriers to getting to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, because on the one end you feel helpless, but on the other end you don't ask for help. Yeah. So that's the problem, basically, right? That's a problem. And then I love how you said that it shows up in the body. So you cannot separate your mind or your soul, your mental health from your physical health. It goes together.
Exactly.
And it's and sometimes we don't recognize it or realize the importance of it, that both has to be healthy, or at least we have to care for both, basically. And I think, I don't know how it is for you, Danique, but I think I feel more the older I get. Like, I feel more, okay, I have to deal with an issue. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it will show up in different places. I don't know if you have the same feeling, right? You know, if you don't solve it there, it's going to show up somewhere else, or it's going to show up again. And I think that takes a toll. Yeah. Sorry.
It does. And you know, really across all ages, Yetika, that is the truth. I think as we get older, yes, to your point, we probably, what we're building is awareness. So, you know, hopefully we're able to connect those dots. Therapy can help with that too. But what we start to experience is that, okay, I was, you know, really upset about this thing or disappointed about, you know, this thing. And now I'm finding myself completely irritable with my partner, with my children. I'm not functioning at work. And so we start to connect the dots that this is probably related. But the same is true for all ages. It's just the awareness that isn't there. And, you know, that's developmentally appropriate. We wouldn't expect kids to say, hello, mom, I'm disappointed that I didn't get this thing, so now I'm going to be acting out about something else, you know? That's what we call acting out. It's usually, it's an expression of an internal experience. So you're absolutely right. This, you know, keeping this thing quiet, not talking about it, it definitely takes a toll. Loving, you know, the way that you phrase that, it does take a toll. It takes a toll emotionally, spiritually, on the body, shows up in our connections, in our relationships. And it's often not sustainable. And that's kind of, you know, what brings us to some point of intervention, seeking help in some way, even if it's talking to a friend. And that might be enough, but just being able to share and not bottle that feeling up inside.
Yes. I 100%, 150% agree. And I want to discuss with you two statements. One statement is, so would you say asking for help is a sign of strength? And does everyone needs a therapist?
Yes. So the first one, asking for help is a sign of strength. Absolutely. Yes. I think all around, asking for help with your mental health, your physical health, asking for help with tasks at work, with your household, with caregiving, asking for help is it's critical because you are in tune with your experience. And when you start to build the capacity to understand what's happening internally, that is always a strength. So if you have a place where you're saying, all right, I need some assistance here, I need some help, then yes, that is absolutely, being vulnerable is a strength. And then everyone needs a therapist. That was the other one.
Yes.
I'm so tempted to say, yes, of course. And I would it a little bit to say, my hope is that everyone gives therapy a try at least once. Because, you know, research shows that folks might not be in therapy for a long time. And there are many people who the experience is just, it varies. There are folks who may have one very cathartic session with a therapist, and that's enough for that experience. And, you know, maybe they connect with the therapist later on, different things are happening in life. So, you know, it doesn't have to mean this is an ongoing relationship or person that you see forever. This could be a relationship that you establish, you know, during one phase of your life, and you may take it with you. You may pause, start again. It looks so different. It's, you know, I don't know what people picture when they therapy, but you know, there's the person laying on the couch, looking through your glasses, notepad. Tell me how you feel today. And you know, it's limiting, but therapy. Therapy is it's broad, it's diverse, it's co-created, it's a courageous conversation, yes, but it honors when it's done well. It, you know, it honors so much of who you are, and so it changes. There are people who do house calls, yet ago with the elderly population, so therapy for them looks like tea and toast for an hour, and that might be the only social connection that population has for that period of time. People do ecotherapy, so therapy could look like a hike or, you know, a walk somewhere outside. So I think as we start to shift our ideas of what therapy has been and, you know, what it was, and sure, in its historical, you know, where it comes from, a lot of those thoughts are based on truth, and it has evolved. And so that is my hope, that yes, maybe everyone does give therapy a try once.
Yes, that is, Danita. You know, you said it so well, because I think a lot of people have the thought that you go to a therapist, you have to sit on the couch, you are judged. Mm-hmm. It is basically maybe a one-sided experience. You know, you're just there to tell them what is on your mind, and that person writes it down in a notebook.
But there's
so much more about it, and I think if you don't try it, you will never know what it can do for you.
Exactly.
That's the main thing. And I think we need to shift generally, like, our perspective, you know, as you said, like, and I love that. So I'm repeating it as well, is like, it is what we invest in ourselves is actually a form of self-care, if you would say, too. And self-care, you know, balances out so much all the things that we're facing, and life is obviously not easy. And then I wanted to say another thing as well, is what I like about going to therapy is another thing is, if I talk to my friends, right, am I maybe putting too much on their shoulders? You know, talk to them. Because they are my friends, they will probably feel the pain the way I will feel it, or vice versa. So I think as well, like, how fair is it to always put it on their shoulders? Is it not better maybe to speak to someone who can be a little bit, who's more neutral, you know, and maybe carries the weight less? But that will be something that I will be interested as well. Like, can you shake off what you hear?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would say the clinical training really does support the therapist in being able to really deeply connect relationally with the client, and also lean on the clinical training and the theories that inform the way that therapist works, to really lean on those to have kind of a level of objectivity, to be able to follow the thread of the conversation, the client's experience, those feelings, keep track of what's going on, keep track of what this narrative is. It is a delicate balance, But yes, therapists are able to lean on that clinical training in a different way than maybe a friend can. I do want to say though that it's you know, friendships are transformative, Yarika. So when people are connected socially, that alone is one of the biggest things that we look for as therapists, just in terms of support, who's in your life. We can do a lot of work together for a meeting once a week, that kind of thing. But when you're out of here, who's with you? Who makes space for you? So to your point, I think it's always, you know, great to check in with your friends. You know, what's going on with you? You know, I've been feeling a lot and I've been sharing a lot, but check in with your friends. How is this going for you? Is there a balance? You know, I want to make space for you too. I think that's part of just relating with each other, right? Making space, making space. I think that's important. The therapist role, though, yes, it is a little bit different. So we are designed to really, the work is designed rather to really hold that space for you. And therapists have therapists. And you know, take care of ourselves, ideally. There's also deep self-care, human beings too. And yeah, there's sessions where I'm really connected and close with my clients. I'm feeling for them. So I do, you know, my own rituals to make sure that I'm able to take care of myself and continue to honor that space while I open another for someone else.
Dominique, there are so many reasons why I love you as a human being. because you're right. You know, friends are, and community is important. Without community, I believe life is not hard. That's what brings me joy. That's what makes me happy. That's what heals me to a certain point where the community that you have can heal you. You know, I think there are limits to that as well, but you're right. Like, you meet someone once a week and probably that's like a person that guides you into the right direction, but you have to have the right environment as well that basically supports whichever inner work you're doing. And if you can check in with your friends and they can check in with you, I mean, that is such a gift that we underestimate a lot of times.
It's a gift. You're absolutely right. It is a gift.
So another question I would like to ask you is, how would the world look like if all of us would ask for help and all of us would have therapy? What would you think?
Well, it's a nice utopia going on there. I do think we would all be connected to at least someone, right? So that will vary from experience to experience and how that shows up for each person. But I do think we would all be connected. So if I am asking for help, then there's someone for me to ask. If I am seeing a therapist in some capacity, you know, once weekly or something, and you are also, it makes space for, I think, a few things. We're both engaging in some internal work. So, so we're less likely, or maybe it happens a lot less, that we're taking out different experiences on each other, just using you and I, for example. So I think generally we are tended to. There's someone who is, you know, who's making space for us, so that it kind of frees up the emotional flexibility, you know, that we're allowed to have. You know, it frees up the capacity to do other things, to think creatively, to think critically, to connect critically. If we're not all holding the things that are really heavy to hold. So if we're asking for help and holding them, if we're looking at clinical work and therapeutic interventions to help us, then we're both, it's kind of a 2-4 situation there where we're all connected. So that's great, building community. And we're all, there's some level of accountability in what's going on internally so that we can show up as fuller humans, as our whole selves. So that would be beautiful.
Yes, I would say that it would be beautiful as well. And I loved how you explained it. And I asked the question because as you said as well, like, I believe it will make a better world for sure. Because if we're all connected, I think we probably are more empathetic. We understand each other better.
Yeah.
And then there's another layer of thought for me is that I don't believe humans are bad. Mm-hmm. I believe our experiences makes us good or bad. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have anyone to handle or to take care of those experiences properly with, I think that affects us. And I, I can see that. Like,
yeah,
the time you change, you know, your friends change, your circle change, and that's all a part of experiences that you have. And I think mm-hmm. mental health, like if you have someone that can help you just maybe rationalize it, you know, talk to about it, whether it's your community, whether it's your yeah. therapist, whether it's your family, I think that makes a huge, huge difference.
It does. It's connected to access, I think, Yadaga, because the question you asked, you know, where we're going was, okay, if we had a magic wand, how would this go? But access is a big part of that, because not everybody can access therapy in a traditional sense. But to your point, yes, it may look the therapeutic part of the healing, if it comes through conversations with family, with friends, if you're not able to access therapy there, you know, with everything that's happening in the world, there are a lot of organizations that are supporting therapeutic conversations, and just through the different apps that you once had to pay for, many of those are offering use for free. Therapists, there are some therapists who are part of different collectives who are offering maybe the first 3 to 5 sessions for free. There are a few of those things going on. Right. So it may look different depending on where you are and the resources that are available to you. And it may just look different. You may find that the conversation that, you know, this, I'll be honest with you, this conversation that you and I are having is feeling a little therapeutic for me.
But different. I can say the same thing, Danique. Oh, that's why, I mean, that is every time when we speak, mm-hmm. for me, therapeutic and healing. So it's, mm-hmm. But even now, just talking about it, and you're right, you know, the access is a big question, specifically in our communities. Access is a big question, because if I talk to, for instance, to my mom and say, okay, that would be good for you, she would say, okay, I want to use my resources, not for that, right? Mm-hmm. That comes from somewhere, that thought process, that comes from how to manage money, from times where you have to think about how to put food on the table first. You know, there's like the priorities are not there. And, yes. and then that's if you have the funds.
Exactly. Right?
And if you don't have the funds, I mean, I definitely think it is a luxury as well, but it's a necessity too. That's, I think, where it gets tricky. But you share with us, like, there are different opportunities right now, and technology changed it. You know, there are ways where you can make it a bit more cost efficient. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good shift, because otherwise we will have, again, societies where we have a part that is maybe mentally healthy, physically, and has access to education, has access to health insurance, has access to everything,
and because of the food. Yes.
Yeah, and I don't think that is an ideal world where we should live in. And we think alike in that regard. But what is your opinion?
I'm in agreement with you fully. I think, you know, as we talked about in the beginning, if we start to see mental health as the way that we do with physical health, and the way that we prioritize physical health or hope to prioritize health in general, then it becomes kind of an integral part of how we approach well-being, right? So if you're thinking of that connection that you're talking about, I would add spiritual to that as well. It's all connected: mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. So if one part is broken down, that changes everything within that person and within that person's realm of influence. So their families, their friends, it's a ripple effect. So yeah, I think, you know, you're absolutely right. Speaking to resources are not equal. So for folks who are deciding, you know, between really, really critical things around survival and this, then this mental health and therapeutic interventions may feel like, very well be a luxury. And if there are other ways to engage, yeah, there are groups sometimes in communities where there are groups who are dealing with the same kinds of maybe challenges, groups around motherhood or couples groups, or, you know, support around racism, things that are just, you know, challenges at work. There are different groups. So that might be a cheaper model that someone might be able to access. Or again, just, you know, leaning on whatever resources you might have available to you. Is it a podcast of your favorite therapist who shares information? Is it what you're reading, what you're listening to? So it starts to take really, you know, different forms. And my hope is that if those things become a little bit more accessible, then maybe over time, that makes a big difference. And then perhaps therapy becomes more accessible. If not, then, you know, community is where I tend to go.
I agree. Again, a lot of things, specifically now where we are feeling the whole pandemic, and I think we're all struggling a little bit with that situation. I think we're talking about different forms of mental health or therapy, or at least we are. I think this time is showing us that we need to take care of it.
Yeah,
that's for me. Like, I can feel it. Like, I can purely feel.
Yeah, this time is showing us we need to take care of ourselves and each other. The things that we are feeling, it's normal to feel the things that we're feeling. And then what? Are we talking about it? Are we able to care for ourselves? There's so much uncertainty in this time, Yadika, so much grief, so much loss. It's just, you know, to be sitting with that. And be functioning or trying to function and show up to work every day, or, you know, if you're able to still have employment, there's loss there too. So there's a lot that we're holding, you know, for friends, for family, for loved ones, that this is the time, I would agree with you, to really try to connect.
Yes, absolutely. But I mean, it's good. We need it. I think it's good, mm-hmm. because for me, it shows we need it to have that time and to think. That's how I see it for myself, mm-hmm. just personally for myself, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's good. It shows us the importance of connection. It shows us the importance of mental health. It shows us that we definitely need each other, and that self-care is important. And as you said, there's a lot of things going on, and maybe that is going to be a shift to the better in the future, because it's a good reminder for each individual. Mm-hmm. And I hope so. I hope so as well. But as we draw, or as we already explained our utopia, so for everyone who's listening, you know what we can do if we just make sure we ask for help and mm-hmm. talk to a therapist, and you know, just make sure we are good.
Yeah,
basically. So we're coming slowly towards the end of this episode, Danique. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you some final questions.
Sure.
That I usually ask. The first one is, what is one beautiful thing someone has done for you? Mm-hmm. And why are you grateful for this experience?
So I think most recently, this is so hard to answer.
I know, it's a tough question.
It also makes me grateful, because I'm really grateful for the community I have. But I think most recently, my birthday was last month, and a friend surprised me and baked a cake. And a couple of friends came over who were part of my quarantine circle. And it was so thoughtful. She baked a cake that is traditionally of Jamaican culinary background. Mm-hmm. Some research. She's Kenyan. She did some research around that. My friends lit candles and sang to me. Yet again, I haven't had that since I was maybe 12. So to stand there and, you know, they're singing happy birthday to you. And it felt really special. And that was before I left the Bay to head to Jamaica to spend some time with my dad. And for me, it's always around thoughtfulness. It's never really the actual material thing. It was just, you know, we have been separated from each other, and with this physical distancing thing that we've all been trying to manage. And mm-hmm. just the thought that went behind finding something that was close to my heritage, making it, trekking it, you know, across town to come and really sing for me. For me, that was really beautiful. And I mm-hmm. definitely appreciate her for that.
That is beautiful. What kind of cake was it?
Hummingbird cake. Thanks for asking. Hummingbird cake. It's a spiced cake is the way that I would describe it. So it's almost like a coffee, chai, raisiny, nutmeg, cinnamon. It's wonderful.
It sounds very delicious. I'll definitely try try that cake. But it's so beautiful. You know, as you said, it's for you, it's the thoughtfulness that made it so special, and that everyone was there for you. And it's again about community, you know, the people around you, and the person that you are, you know, because they are there to celebrate you. Oh, okay. I lost me again. Sorry. Yeah,
you're back. It's okay.
So it is, for me, that's so beautiful because it is like, as you said, it's about the little things, you know, the thoughtfulness, the research she did, and the people showing up for you. But that is as well because you are a special person too, because you show up for others as well. So thank you so much for sharing that, Danique. And the next thing I would like to ask you is, if you could change one thing on this planet, what would it be?
Another question. Oh my gosh. You know, my first thought is, oh, there would be no coronavirus, obviously. and then we get access and everyone having everything that they need. But I guess, you know, if I were to pick something, just even based on the conversation that we're having today, I think it would be the ability to connect, the ability to also to have space and time for introspection. To be able to build the awareness around your experience, what's going on internally, your emotions, your feelings. The word that you used earlier, Yariga, empathy, I think that really it's such a life source and it's healing. So to be able to cultivate empathy, I think is something that I would want to change. If we can approach each other with empathy, really, if we can look at ourselves with empathy, without judgment, being kind to ourselves, we'd have a much better place. And you know, same goes for the planet. If we're approaching taking care of the planet with empathy, I think we'd be around for a while.
Yes, so true. Empathy is definitely something very special. I think something that you can lose, that you can gain back, but something that makes life, I think, more joyful, as you described it, you know.
Yeah.
And so that is yes. Mm-hmm. Can I vote you for president? That we can get this going.
That's funny.
And then while we're there's something that I talked a bit before about was. Like a question that already arised before was, do you believe that humans are good? I would like to know that from your professional background, the perspective, and from your individual.
Fortunately, in this case, it's one and the same. And it's yes, I do believe that humans are good. And so, yeah, professionally, I am. That's what I do for a living. I am invested in people's journeys and their what they're processing in their hopes for restoring goodness and balance in their lives, and personally, I believe the same thing. So, you know, from both ends, to your point earlier, the environment shaping a lot of our experiences, the environment shaping a lot of the narratives that we internalize, how we're socialized, how we're allowed to be, what we're allowed to feel. You know, when we're up against different kinds of things like that, different challenges, what does that mean for us? How does that change us? How does it shape us? So if someone's leaning in, you know, the other direction, I often, you know, think what happened to you versus, you know, what's wrong with you or something like that. So yes, I do believe that humans are inherently good. And, you know, that's not to take away from when people cause harm, Yariga, it's an awful feeling, right? When someone causes you harm, it's an awful feeling. So it's not always accessible. It's not always the first thought. You know, when someone is really hurtful and causes harm, your first thought might not be, oh, I believe you're inherently good. So let me, you know, that we're human beings. I think if, you know, stripping away all of that and kind of pausing for a moment, a lot of that time, a lot of that is about the person and not so much about us, even though we're left impacted So yeah, short answer is yes, I believe humans.
that's good. Yes, I like the way you explained it. Like this, when we are impacted by someone who's hurting us, and most likely it is because that person has hurt themselves. But in the moment, I'm just feeling the impact of it, and it may be difficult to just separate that from the issue. And then on the other hand, we need to protect ourselves. I believe you need to protect yourself as well. So my final question, I don't want it to be my final question, is what is, you know, that the title of my podcast is What is the Idea of Us? And I would like to know, what is your idea of us?
Mm. I love the title of your podcast, by the way. My idea of us is that we are all connected. We are all responsible for one another. And I'm not sure how that sounds, but I can tell you what I mean. In your very first episode, you talked about the principle of Ubuntu, and I loved it so much. And it's something that I really rely on in my work and in my life. I am because you are. I am Danique because you are Yedega. We are in relationship with each other in every context, you know. So my idea of us is that we are connected. And if we can see that, you know, if I can see that my joy and my well-being is inextricably linked to yours, then I have empathy. Then I'm invested in your future because I'm invested in mine. It makes for a more holistic way of being with each other. That's my idea of us.
There couldn't be a more perfect ending, Danique. You explained it so beautiful. Perfect. Thank you. Like, I mean, you know, I agree on so many levels with you. It's Ubuntu is a beautiful, beautiful philosophy, the way you explained it. I might copy that. But okay, so
ancient wisdom, you know, all this came before us. Our ancestors set this up for us to live by and to lean on. So it's yours, it's mine, it's ours.
It is. That's so true. And we are here. We are thanking our ancestors for that again, for giving us that wisdom. And I'm thanking you, Danique, for sharing with us your thoughts today, your personality, for sharing, you know, so many valuable things. Like, I hope, and I think we hope the same, that everyone, you know, takes the things that they need with them, and make sure that they are taking care of themselves, and understanding, you know, that we are all one community, and we need to take care of each other. We need to check in, and I learned so much, Danique.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the invite. Thank you for creating this space. It's so important, and I value you so much. So thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you, Danique.
I mean, what can I say or summarize that would give it justice? Danique shared with us so many valuable insights, and if going to a counselor was not attractive yet, I'm sure she changed your mind. I want to highlight one quote from her today because it was so powerful for me that I even thought about it days after we recorded this episode, where she talks about her passion and purpose. I quote, "My passion and purpose in mental health is being fully invested in the mental and emotional well-being of my ancestors' children." I had to think about this for days, and I was wondering why it resonated with me so much. And then I remembered a saying that said, when you heal yourself, you equally heal your ancestors. And we also help prevent the next generation from going through the same things. To be at the forefront of this and to make this your life's mission touches me to the point where I actually am getting emotional. And I have deep, deep gratitude to her and everyone else in this profession.
What I learned today from Danique and what I would love for you to take with you is that finding your purpose is essential, because Danique is a great example of what you can achieve and impact if you are truly aligned with your mission. That there are stigmas around mental health that we together as a community should break. Stigmas around why and who has to be consciously strong and robust and pushed through. Around sharing secrets of information about your family situation and therefore hiding the issues and not solving them. About the belief that mental health is something we only fix or care of once it's broken. Let's try to shift that focus and make asking for help healthy and a sign of strength. Let's applaud people who seek a counselor or a therapist for their courage. Let's check in ourselves, in our friends, in our family members. Because that sounds like the society that I would love to create and love to live in. And I leave it at that. I want to take the time again and thank Danique for sharing her knowledge, her wisdom, and her time with us. Make sure to reach out to her. You can reach out to her over Instagram through her handle, Danique_B. And you can reach out to me as well if you would like to have more contact information from her. We would love to know what you thought about this show today. What are your thoughts about mental health and asking for help? And I hope this was of value for you. Until next time, I wish you much love and light. Yehadaka.